getting drunk with these people or doing drugs or anything like that, but at least moving in those social circles and being yourself and just getting to be friendly with them, because those are the people, especially the sons and daughters of Hollywood royalty, those are the real movers and shakers. And if you're moving to LA completely cold, like, you know, you're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
You really need to know those people. At least, at the very least, know who they are and know their taste and something about them. If, you know, find out where the Kardashians hang out or something like that, and try to move in those circles.
Wow.
I wish schmoozing.
Mastermind family, welcome back to the show. I am your host, JoJo, and today's Artist Motivation, where we bring on the hottest, latest artists and allow them to bring insight, inspiration, and hope so you can go out and create amazing content. And we have a very special guest. She is an entertainment consultant. She has a lot of experience working with different companies like Sega, Level 5, and so many other companies that, I mean, the list will go on and on. She's worked on, produced shows like Power Rangers, Digimon, Sonic Boom. I love Sonic, FYI. So she is a media producer, brand strategist, and a social media influencer. So without further ado, Marlene Sharp, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, JoJo. I will try to live up to that amazing introduction that you gave. Thank you. I appreciate it a lot.
No problem. I mean, your resume speaks for itself. I mean, you've obviously have been very intertwined in the entertainment industry, and you've worked on really cool shows. I mean, so you've obviously know what you're doing. So thanks for being on the show.
I fooled you.
So Marlene, tell us a little bit about yourself to the people, and just, you know, your background, and just, you know, what you're focusing on and things of that nature.
Yeah, so my name's Marlene Sharp, and originally I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I moved to California for the entertainment industry, but originally moved for performance. So I have an MFA in musical theater. I went to undergrad in New Orleans, at Loyola New Orleans, and came out here for an MFA in musical theater.
Okay.
And then after I graduated from school, I moved up the coast a bit to Los Angeles, which is where I am now.
Okay.
And I kind of fell into the line of work that I'm in now through temping. And I started out temping and also auditioning simultaneously or as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
I gave those temp jobs to run off to an audition and such. And then one of the temp jobs that I had was a temp to perm job that was at the office of the former president of Bandai America. So
he
was very instrumental in bringing Power Rangers to the United States. And at the time I started working for him, he was retired from that. And so I was offered a full-time job. He offered me a full-time job after I had temped there for a few weeks.
Okay.
And I needed the money, so I accepted. And I never really wanted to be the starving artist.
Right.
Starving writer. I always wanted to work in the business, and either as a writer, producer, or creative executive, something like that.
Right.
And although adaptations of Japanese boys action properties was not at the top of my list of things that I wanted to do, I was willing to give it a shot. It was a job, and I was one of two employees at the time, and then the other employee left. She was director of development. She left, and then I moved into her job.
Okay.
And I was at the company a total of 5 years, and that's how I got into animation and kids and family entertainment, merchandise driven properties, and all that. And I've kind of stayed in that space for all of my career.
Wow. That's a pretty steep and like interesting start to your career, right?
Yeah. Well, temping, I don't really know how. I haven't temped in a while, unfortunately. but temping used to be a really viable way to get your start in the business. You know, you would sign up with a temp agency, and it was only necessary for me to temp for a few weeks before I got a temp to perm position.
Wow.
And you know, it wasn't very lucrative, but it was a lot easier to just register with the temp agency and then wait for an opportunity to come along rather than sending my resume off into the black hole of resume portals online.
Right.
And so, and then it was also a way to get to try out different companies as well. So
right.
I temped at Renaissance Atlantic for a couple of weeks, but then before that I had like about two weeks of temping at various companies.
Okay.
And so that was interesting, getting to see, you know, different aspects of the business.
Wow. I mean, so going from that to like now, you know, 2019, what would you like recommend to somebody who's like starting in your position, like in your shoes, like back when you first got into the entertainment business? Like, how would they go about breaking in or getting started or just, you know, trying to find their way, you know, within the industry?
Well, let's see. I think what you're doing, JoJo, actually, is very, very good and effective. And that is creating your own content and creating your own opportunities and promoting. If you can be a one man or one woman production company and distribution company, you are already way ahead of so many people. I look at the job posts on LinkedIn a lot, and I highly recommend creating a LinkedIn profile and being very active there, because especially in the entertainment industry, recruiters look there.
Okay.
There are a lot of job posts where it'll say like produce, the job description or the job title will be producer, or I'm trying to think what are some of the other job titles, but essentially they don't want a producer, they want a one person production company. They want one person who will be able to shoot, edit, can do After Effects, can do you know, maybe some Maya animation if possible.
Yeah.
Knows all social channels, knows everything about pop culture, and can make recommendations on where, you know, where the most effective places to post are, and can grow content from, you know, the incubation stages online to something that could potentially be on a network.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that you train yourself to do that, the more employable you will be in this business.
Wow. Okay. So that's actually pretty practical stuff. I mean, so would you say that the entertainment industry is pretty cutthroat, or is it, you know, I don't know. Tell me the truth about the entertainment industry.
Well, it is cutthroat, but I think that life is cutthroat. I think that humanity is cutthroat. And I certainly haven't found entertainment to be any more cutthroat than going to an all-girls Catholic high school, which is what I did in New Orleans, and being in a sorority in college, and just being a person. So yes, it is cutthroat, but you can find that kind of dog-eat-dog behavior in
any industry.
Yeah, and I think the reality is if you need the money to live, there's a certain amount of stuff you have to put up with, and that's the sad reality. You could take a stand, of course.
Oh,
you could say I'm not going to deal with this, or I'm going to report this kind of behavior. But there's an article just this week in New York Magazine about women and men who came forward as part of Me Too, and how their lives have changed in the last year, couple of years. And a lot of them are, it sounds like they're sorry that they came forward, because their lives have been upended, but there still has been retaliation. And even though it's more subtle, or you know, it's packaged as something else. Mm-hmm. Like it's there's more, it's more, maybe a little bit more discreet. There's still that stigma going on. So
right.
And some of the people, it's a great issue, by the way. New York Magazine, October, whatever.
Was it October 4th or 3rd, or?
Yeah, they might be 1 week ahead.
Okay.
But they have of course they profile case studies, and they profile a lot of entertainment case studies. Of course, you know, somebody representative of the Harvey Weinstein scandal and whatever. But there's a woman who worked at McDonald's. There's a woman. There are people from like factory jobs and.
Wow.
Jobs, academia, it's all across different professions.
Wow.
So life is tough all over, not just in the entertainment business.
So knowing that life is tough all across the board, what would you recommend to people who have that mindset that, oh, you know, everything should be just given to me, or I should be given the opportunity to, you know, show my talent, or, you know, break into the industry? What would you tell people that have that type of mindset?
Well, I think a little bit of that is good, is confidence. And certainly what I've observed in my career is that people with a lot of confidence and to a certain extent, people who are in your face about their talents are pretty successful. I mean, if they consciously hurt people and wreak havoc, then, you know, that's
different story.
But a certain amount of confidence is definitely helpful. You don't want it to be because you will be your best advocate or
best cheerleader. Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't want to stab people in the back. Like, I feel that it's better to think of people as potential allies rather than potential enemies, and think of ways that you can help each other and collaborate. So
right.
I think that's maybe a more positive
approach.
Your energies.
That's actually very smart, right? Instead of trying to say, what can I, you know, get out of somebody, instead of saying, you know, just start thinking like, okay, what can I do to collaborate with this person or maybe add value to this person, right?
Yeah, and you will stand apart from the rest. If you think about what can I bring to this situation, like how can I help the other person? Because as somebody who is contacted a lot online from people all over the world,
mm-hmm.
90% of the people are, they tell me that they are the greatest actor, writer, director, animator, whatever.
Yeah.
And how are you going to help me? And then when I tell them that this is my job and I'm a paid consultant, usually they're not so friendly anymore.
Oh, geez.
And,
really?
You know, a lot of people have a sense of entitlement that, you know, they think that they're great and they want stuff for free. And it could be that they are the most deserving people, but there are a lot of people who think that. And even just to wade through the masses of people who believe that they're the greatest talent ever, it takes time. And
right.
I mean, I pay my bills too, so. So, you know, we're at an impasse. So yeah, if you are at least open to helping other people in some way, like bringing something of value of yourself, and everybody has something to offer, then you will stand out, because there are a lot of people who are just walking around with this huge sense of entitlement, but they're not quite as giving.
Understood. Okay, so tell me, what was it like working on shows like Power Rangers, you know, Sonic Boom? I mean, tell me, what was it like? What was the environment? You know, did it feel great just working on those type of shows? Or is that really your passion? Or do you have something else cooking up in the oven?
Yeah, so to be honest, none of those shows were my passion. My passion is sitcoms.
Okay.
I always wanted to do. I feel like Tina Fey had my career, and Unfortunately, there's only one Tina Fey career, and he got it, so.
Yeah.
So while for what I found was the most excitement I got out of my jobs was to brag to other people and watch other people's reactions, because I knew that the day-to-day was not glamorous, was not, it's very much, working in animation especially is very much an office job. You're pushing papers or, you know, buttons on a computer. You're not like schmoozing with celebrities. It's,
wow.
It's a very long and laborious process. And, you know, there are a lot of meetings and so forth. And even working on the live action shows like Power Rangers and so forth, I wasn't working on set. Mm-hmm. And I was mainly working for Bandai's interest, because mm-hmm. my boss had a consulting agreement with Bandai, and so everything that we did had some kind of value to Bandai. So we were looking at the toy interests. And so the people at Saban Entertainment were the ones who were working more on the show day to day. So we would get a lot of footage, and we'd read a lot of scripts and give comment. We did a lot of things where we were giving comments and feedback, but we weren't always the creators. Where we got to be creative was when Bandai would send us materials from Japan and say, can you make this into an American hit TV show? And then we really had to get creative, because it would be a lot of stuff that did not have linear storytelling, wasn't in English, wasn't dubbed or anything like that. And then it was just all this stuff that didn't make sense initially, and we had to make sense of it.
Wow.
The only time that I really thought, wow, I'm in show business, is when I worked for a company called RGH Entertainment, and we were developing a movie based on Paul McCartney's children's book called High in the Clouds.
Okay.
And McCartney used to come to our office regularly, and there was one day, the first day that he came, where he actually went to all the executives' offices, and my boss introduced him. So he came to my office, he looked at my bookshelf, he asked me a few questions, and then he would come to the office every now and then. He came a lot, because it was over the course of a couple of years, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was always kind of cool. He'd drive up in his purple Corvette, he'd have his bodyguard / assistant with him, and then it was always this fire drill before he came, because we'd get a last-minute call from his assistant. We couldn't really make appointments with him. It was just like, Paul's coming over, so be ready in a half an hour, and then it was like this mad dash to get all the vegan foods that he liked and make everything comfortable and fancy for him. But it was kind of cool. But animation isn't really the same kind of glamorous, star-driven world. And kids' TV in general, even the live-action stuff.
Wow.
Not as glamorous as some of the other stuff. But when I was an actor, I had lots of cool experiences with...
Like what?
Celebrities. Well, I was on a short-lived NBC sitcom called Come to Papa.
Okay.
I felt like I had died and gone to heaven. That was probably the biggest acting job I ever had. It lasted like 2 weeks.
Wow.
And we shot at Warner Brothers, and I was a recurring character, so I was in the pilot and one other episode, and then we had to reshoot the pilot because some of the stars who were cast in the original pilot were not wanted by the network after they saw the pilot. So there was a bunch of recasting that was done. But luckily I was not recast.
Okay.
But I got to work with Steve Carell, and Jerry Seinfeld was one of the producers, although we never saw him. But it was just cool to know that he was
involved. Right, he was involved.
Yeah, he was involved. That was good enough for me.
Yeah.
And some of my favorite actors when I was a kid, Shirley Jones was in the original pilot, and
okay.
Hal Linden, and let's see, who else? Oh, it was so long ago, I can't even remember all the people, but it's still something that is like one of my favorite memories of being out here and, you know, being in show business and everything. So
yeah,
I'm very grateful for that experience.
That is awesome. So, okay, so I know that you said their focus was like sitcom. So is that still your focus, or you've gone away from that, or like, what are you focusing on right now?
That's a good question. I am focused on survival. I feel like I've gotten not less ambitious. I still have the ambition, mm-hmm. but I have more control. I'm more practical now, maybe. And so I still write and, you know, produce my own little projects here and there and enter them in competitions and, you know, hope for the best. But,
Cause you won some competitions, haven't you?
Yeah, just over the summer I won a script contest, mm-hmm. and it was for a sitcom pilot that I wrote. So I try to stay positive that like anything can happen, which is true. But I'm kind of counting on my two little nieces to hurry up and get to adulthood, and then they can move out here, and then they can. You know, I'll be like Betty White, you know, in the 70s and 80s and 100s. That's where I think that's my sweet spot.
Okay.
Like, yeah, then my golden years. And then I can really go crazy and I can really focus on all of my pet projects.
Oh. So,
yeah, but now I'm kind of open to whatever comes my way, because when I was first working on Power Rangers, I'll tell you, I was very depressed.
Seriously?
I did not like Power Rangers.
What?
I thought, wow, this is probably like the worst show that I could have ever get. Like, oh yeah, I came all the way to LA. Power Rangers, God, this is humiliating. But then, like, through the years, it's become this beloved, iconic show, and I could not have predicted that at the time. I was embarrassed to tell people.
Seriously?
Have you seen the first few seasons, or the first, have you seen Power Rangers?
Yes, I've seen it.
As film artistry?
I've seen it. It's not the greatest.
There's not much.
Yeah.
We're selling toys. So like, we didn't even want it to be good. We wanted it to sell toys. And he would tell the writers, there's too much dialogue. I want to see a script. I don't want to see a script that's this thing. It's got to be this thing and all action sequences. That's it. Otherwise, how are the kids going to see the toys and know the play pattern and,
yeah,
you know, want to play stuff? So like, when you hear that and that's the only voice in your head.
Yeah.
All the time, then, you know, I'm not a boy, so I wouldn't necessarily have been a fan of Power Rangers anyway. But
right.
Then when you hear your boss even kind of like poo-pooing the product, it's really depressing. So I thought, oh, if only, even if we could do like a girls project, that would be something, that would be great. But we only worked on one girls project when I was working with Frank at Renaissance Atlantic, mm-hmm. and it was very short-lived. It was meant to be an homage to Sailor Moon.
Oh, okay.
Nice, updated Sailor Moon, mm-hmm. and we were developing it for series, and since I was one of the only girls involved, I mean, even at Saban, it was very male-dominated. My boss, who would usually take all the meetings and like be hands-on with the development, he let me go to some of the meetings at Saban and, you know, to jump into the creative discussions.
Yeah.
And I was one woman out of like 10 old guys who were sitting around like pontificating about what little stereotypical things that little girls like.
Seriously? And they didn't ask you?
Yeah. And so after the first meeting, I went back my office and I said, Frank, this is not acceptable. Because this show is going to be so awful. I mean, finally we get to do a girls project and it's a bunch of all these old men who don't really know. And I said, look, I would not tell you what to put in Power Rangers because I'm a boy. I don't know about, you know, weapons and vehicles and whatever. But I am a girl. So I need to tell you, you must at least have a woman
on
story.
The, mm-hmm.
At the very least, even if she's got a whole writing team of males, because at least she can go and change things and whatever. So
exactly.
So we were able to get a female story editor, but the show never did make it to series because Saban sold Fox Kids Network and Saban Entertainment to Disney.
What?
Yeah, this was in the mid-2000s.
Wow.
So he sold everything. And so for a while, Power Rangers was on Disney Channel.
Right.
And so it was right before that. And so right before the sale happened, Saban really scaled back on their production. Like, hardly anything went forward because, you know, Prime Saban and the executives there could see that they weren't going to be in this business for the business of
entertainment, stuff
for much longer. So, yeah, unfortunately, nothing ever happened with that show. But it was quite an eye-opening experience for me as a young person in the business, and also as a girl in the business, too,
right?
To see how things work behind the scenes.
Wow, what a plethora of experience that you've like just gone through. I mean, being you know one of few females in the industry, you know, with, I mean, wow, that's crazy. So I guess what are like some of the things that you have gone like an experience that you like, you know, I wish I would have done a little differently than how I did it back then. So like, what are some past mistakes that you made that, you know, you wish you would like redo and just communicate to other people who are like listening to this?
I kind of feel like that's my whole career. Better and then I'd be sitting in my mansion in Bel Air and talking to you with all my Oscars in the background. So I don't know. I'm so happy that you were glad to have me on the show, but I really don't feel like I am the person to say, hey, look at me, I did everything right and here's what I would have done differently. I know I made a lot of mistakes, but honestly, okay, this is one thing.
Okay.
I was never really part of the party scene out here, like going to the places where young people hang out and,
yeah,
you know, hipster stuff. Like,
yep.
I'm so not a hipster at all. So I was always very, very much in tune with networking events. I would go to a lot of like my alumni association mm-hmm. event or screenings and those types of things, but I didn't go to the Standard and have drinks or, you know, and that's where a lot of the
business transactions happen.
And all of that. And I mean, I guess I'm not dead, so I can still do it, but I just feel like those days have sort of passed. And I wish when I was younger, like, I'm not advocating getting drunk with these people or doing drugs or anything like that, but at least moving in those social circles and being yourself and just getting to be friendly with them, because those are the people, especially the sons and daughters of Hollywood royalty, those are the real movers and shakers. And if you're moving to LA completely cold, like, you know, you're starting from scratch, you really need to know those people, at least at the very least know who they are and know their taste and something about them. If, you know, find out where the Kardashians hang out or something like that, and try to move in those circles.
Wow.
I was schmoozing.
That's really practical and actually smart, right? I mean, you can still be yourself and still be in those type of environments, and you don't have to, like, you know, cave in and do what other people do, right? And you can still network and connect with the people that you want to connect with, right?
Yes, Yes, I do. I think don't ever underestimate the importance of schmoozing. And you know, not. I think there's a way to do it where you can be genuine and you don't come across as just like some desperate on. So you know, perhaps. And this is something that I did, but I didn't use it to this extent. But I've always done freelance writing for various publications and a lot of interviews. And I didn't really pursue celebrity interviews all that much, unless it was somebody who happened to fall into my lap, so to speak. But
yeah.
But that's a way that you can get to know people and offer something of value, like, hey, you know, I would love to do an interview with you for such and such website or publication or what have you, and it kind of gives you credibility too. If you're going to an event or you're schmoozing with these people and you can tell them, I have a legit reason for being here, I'm covering it for such and such,
right?
Then you don't come across so much as like a desperate
stalker, crazy. You know, you come off as a normal person. Okay, like this person has a reason to be here. So, no, that's actually really good advice. And so, I guess, Marlene, like, tell us, okay, what are your really, like, really, really passionate projects that, you know, you have coming out in the pipeline that you're working on that you want people to know about and, like, get a little bit of a taste or a sample of what you're working on? Go ahead and, you know, tell us.
Well, I do have visual aid here about my it's my number one passion.
Okay.
Hang on.
Okay.
This is my number one right here. This little furry child.
Mm-hmm.
This is Blanche.
Hey.
My production company, Pink Poodle Productions.
Okay.
She's a Bichon Poodle mix. And she is such a star. And so I am always in search of more vehicles for Blanche to star in, or, you know, just to insert herself wherever it makes sense. Or even if it doesn't make sense, I don't care. I'm a shameless dog stage mother, and it's easier for me to promote her. But then I can come along for the ride, kind of like Gypsy Rose Lee and Mama Rose. Mm-hmm. It's like that kind of a dynamic. So yeah, if you look at my website, pinkpoodleproductions.com,
okay,
you'll see a lot of Blanche on there, and there are our projects, past, present, and future, that are Blanche vehicles.
Oh, that is very cool. Okay. And
I love animals. I love dogs, so I'm always thrilled to work on anything with real animals, especially dogs.
So anything with, like, maybe like pets, like dogs, cats, or any animal, or does it have to be a dog specifically?
Well, dogs are my favorite, and I'm allergic to cats. Although I did make a web series about a cat, and that was one of my early projects that I sold, and it didn't go all the way.
Yeah.
It was kind of a tragic story, actually, but it was a good experience in the sense that I created it with two partners, and we sold it to this other company, and we got to produce some animation. But
what?
Real cats, I am allergic to, and and I don't know if you can hear it in my voice today, I'm having terrible allergies today, and I haven't been around any cats. So it's dangerous, I guess, an actual cat. But I love all animals.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really, really fun to work more with them. And I remember one time I was working with Russell Simmons on a project.
What?
That stretched out over a couple of years. And so we have a lot of meetings at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And he used his house a lot for filming.
Okay.
And so one day when we were leaving his house, I guess it was for PETA or some cause that he was involved in, but there were all these exotic animals being brought in. It would look like a circus we were going to, because it was just one crate or cage after another of these huge exotic animals, and
mm-hmm.
And it was just such a, such a crazy atmosphere because we were working on an animated show with them.
Okay.
And then, you know, something not related to the animals at all. And we just saw the, you know, and it was this whole circus. And I haven't been there, but I thought, oh, how cool that is that he can, you know, work on a cartoon for a little bit and then
bring some exotic.
Sometime, and then the exotic animals come, and if he can have a bit of a change of pace there.
Yeah.
So
that is crazy.
I do have a lot of crazy stories.
That is awesome, though. I mean, those type of experiences and memories, I mean, those are priceless, right? I mean, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, the price is therapy sometimes, you know. So sometimes they seem funnier or more entertaining in retrospect.
Yeah.
And you need some talking it through to get over them or to put them into perspective. But yeah, I try, and that's another thing that I recommend to just anybody, whether you're in the business or not, is stand-up comedy. It is a great therapeutic technique because it's all based on complaining. You heard that all of comedy is based on complaining,
right?
And it, because people aren't funny if their lives are
perfect.
Beautiful and perfect, and they have, you know, no issues.
No one's gonna like it.
Yeah, who cares? You know, go live your perfect life and don't
somewhere else.
Or you're not gonna rub some of that off on me. I can't be bothered. But stand up is, as a profession, it's difficult because you have to write all your material and then get yourself booked and. You know, it's a grind and it's a commitment.
Yeah.
But if you take some classes or, like, you know, I'm sure on YouTube there are tons of how-to videos and so forth.
Sure.
There are things you can do on your own. It's very therapeutic because it's all like taking your personal experiences and then synthesizing them into something that makes people laugh.
Right.
And it's a good way to. You know, take lemons and make lemonade.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I recommend that as a coping mechanism.
That's a good recommendation. Okay, Marlene, it's been great having you on the show. I mean, we got to ask, you know, what are some last words of wisdom that you would like to impart on the show?
Well, I'll just say this. I'm addicted to podcasts these days. So I would say if you're a person who's not into podcasts, you're really missing out. Check them out. They're free on your phone, and you can find some really fascinating true crime podcasts.
Yes.
And I this is like a recent addiction of the last year. So, and they seem to be coming out so fast and furious. You can always find something good on there, and I really believe that the market for podcasts that then become TV series or movies or, you know, transition to other forms of entertainment, I think that's only going to increase. So that's something that I just like. I don't know if I'll ever work in podcasts, but I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's something, you know, something that people are talking about. And as far as other words of advice, I don't know, be nice to people. Catch more bees with honey than with vinegar. True.
It is, though. It's very true.
It is. And also, you really do stand out in a good way because there are a lot of jerks out there. So if you can be an example of
kindness
and goodwill and generosity, then people will remember that.
Right.
And then you'll have something to feel good about too.
Wow. Beautifully, beautiful, beautiful, and well said, Marlene. So tell the people, where can they find you and connect with you if they want to work with you?
Okay. Well, I'm obsessed with LinkedIn. So if you're not on LinkedIn, I highly recommend it because that's where all kinds of hiring is done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Marlene Sharp. And then I have my website, Pink Poodle Productions. those, just www.pinkpoodleproductions.com. And what else? I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I do tend to publish articles for various platforms from time to time, and I will promote those on my social channels, as well as any projects that I'm working on that are about to air or drop or what have you. So yeah, but I'm most active on LinkedIn, and I have a YouTube channel too, but it's not really anything exciting. LinkedIn is where I focus all my energy.
Okay. Awesome. 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 Mastermind family, that is going to do it for the show. We hope you enjoyed this episode with Marlene Sharp. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this video with anyone that you think could find useful to this information. And Mastermind family, we'll see you guys on the next episode.